Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 55 of NML Crossing, where just a little while ago I had just gotten home from a comic shop. And it was nice being in a comic shop again. It's been a little bit because of the move and everything. It's been kind of crazy. So this was a much needed and much enjoyed a bit of normalcy that I'm trying to reestablish, replace in my life. It's been upside down, so it was nice to get my fingers inky again in the bins. The shop I was at had a buy two get one in the back issue area, so I was digging around because I'm trying to backfill my Batman 400s, trying to get the entirety of the 400s. A very very seminal 100 issues there. And after today, I only need 5 issues, which is pretty cool. Unfortunately, 3 of them are Death in the Family, so those might be a little spendy, or spendier than I would like them to be, but I'll get there. But you know, as I was filing away the issues I got, it dawned on me just how much happened in that 100 issues. And I started thinking, which is not a good thing to do, which is sometimes dangerous, sometimes dicey, sometimes just damn frustrating. But I was thinking about how that 100 issues, issue 400 to 500, so much stuff happened. So much stuff that was seminal and memorable, stuff that we still cite nowadays, stuff that the issues that come out now still cite. And it got me to thinking, because what do you figure? 100 issues is about, what would we say, 8 years? 8 years of books here? We can say a decade for easy math, right? But I try to think back to 8 to 10 years ago, and I'm trying to think if there's been any sort of memorable story that didn't have anything to do with the multiverse, or universes ending or starting. And I'm coming up pretty empty, which is really sad. I mean, look at the Batman 400s. It starts with year one, and it ends with Nightfall. So much stuff happened in that 8 to 10 years that we still talk about today. I couldn't tell you a whole heck of a lot that's happened in comics from any company over the past 8 to 10 years that actually matters, that actually would be cited, would you know, people would look back on it and be like, okay, this is something we need to reference in future stories. You know, I'm reading, you know, I caught up on the Zosky Batman, and the references that we're getting are from the Morrison stuff. So what was that, 15, 16 years ago? That's where we're getting our references from. Nothing from the past 10 years, really. I caught up on the Josh Williamson Superman, which has been a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be. And the references there are all from the post-crisis. You know, there's references to Lex Luthor being president. There's references to Lex Luthor's kryptonite ring. It's crazy how stories just don't really, there, it doesn't feel like there's like a free-flowing sort of narrative or plot or anything. These are just stories that are getting slapped together so they can fit into a trade paperback or graphic novel or graphic album or whatever we're calling it today. And then it's on to the next thing. It's really, I'm not a bean counter. You know, I'm not an accountant. I have absolutely no stake financially in any of these companies, so I'm sure what they're doing, there's a reason for it. But as a reader and as a chronicler and as a fake-ass historian of these characters and these universes, it's sad to see. And maybe this is just my experience. Maybe I'm missing some really great stories. Because, truth be told, I don't read as much as I used to. So if I am missing out on anything, please let me know. But it was just such a sobering sort of slap in the face to flip through those Batman 400s and be like, wow, you know, year one, Death in the Family, A Lonely Place of Dying, Tim Drake showing up, Nightfall. So many stories that will be collected. They're evergreens, right? They get collected constantly. And we still talk about them today. We still speak fondly, mostly, of them today. And it's, I don't know. I'm trying to think back to, you know, 8 years ago was Rebirth. And has there been a story since then that doesn't... I'm trying to exclude everything that's multiversal. Because, I mean, we've had at least two crises since then, right? So anything that's not crisis-y or not Secret Wars-y, it's just something that takes place in a single book or a single family of books that matters. And I don't know. We just don't get that too much anymore. But anyway, enough of me shaking my fist at clouds. We got a book to discuss today. And that book is Batman number 564, which had an April 1999 cover date. This is Fear of Faith Part 3, Life in Hell. Written by Devin Grayson, pencils by Dale Eaglesham. Inks, Jamie Mendoza or Jaime Mendoza. Colors, Noel Giddings and Digital Chameleon. Letters, Todd Klein. Edits, Illich, Vincenzo O'Neill. Cover price, $1.99. And we open with... I might be projecting here, but this is kind of like a Devin Grayson special. It's a thing where you can tell she's done a fair bit of research in order to land her point. We got the Scarecrow. He's narrating. He always narrates when we start these issues lately. And he's comparing various theological takes on hell. Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, they all have different, yet somehow very similar takes on the darker side of the theoretical afterlife. One constant among all of them is that hell, no matter what, you know, religion, no matter what philosophy, hell is a land without hope. From here, we arrive back at the Ark, where Huntress has dropped off Mikey as he continues bleeding out. Now, she knows in her heart that he's not long for this world. You know, without medication and supplies, he probably won't make it the night. Fathers Chris and Papa Leo, they suggest that, you know, maybe she ought not underestimate the power of prayer. But again, this is a land without hope, right? Helena rushes off to procure some more substantial aid for Mikey. And as she does so, Scarecrow takes the pulpit, almost mocking the flock for praying in this forsaken place. From here, we follow Huntress to a rooftop where Batman is just hanging out. He's like just leaning against the wall with his arms crossed. She's there to ask for help, because Mikey's gonna die unless they can find him some real medical attention ASAP. Batman suggests that she just take Mikey across town. She'll probably find somewhere to drop him off, I guess. I don't know. But there simply ain't time for that. We know that. She knows that. Now Batman knows that. She appeals to him, reminding him of all the hard work that she has done of late in order to get into his good graces and in order to earn his trust. Things that she claims he might not even know about. Batman finally relents, and he asks her to bring Mikey around back at the cathedral, and he'll take it from there. And so, not a page later, we see Batman carrying Mikey toward a triage. Now, Mikey, he realizes that these might be his final moments on this planet, and he's got quite a bit to say. He admits that currently he is happy. He's happy that he was able to turn things around. He was, however briefly, one of the good guys. And you know, Gotham City, he says it's a beautiful place. If only for the opportunity it gave him to repent and finally do right. Shortly, Batman arrives at Dr. Leslie Tompkins' MASH-style triage to deliver Mikey. Meanwhile, back at the Ark, Scarecrow is fomenting fear among the flock, as he does. He assures them all that Mikey is dead, and he warns that they're all going to eventually share in that fate. Huntress is hearing all of this play out, and she turns to Father Chris with like a, "You kidding me with this crap?" kind of vibe. She questions him for allowing Scarecrow to stay here, to which Chris steadfastly says he will never turn him or anybody away. That's simply not how he does things. He insists that without his fear toxin, the Scarecrow is just some dude, completely harmless, and in need. So he wants to make sure that everybody is welcome, and everybody who needs help can get help at the Ark. Helena says she hopes that he never has to face how wrong he is about this. We follow this pair into the back room where Papaleo is playing chess with a young parishioner. Chris asks him to take over for a bit because he's got a pressing meeting with Commissioner Gordon. Papaleo is confused since Chris didn't say hello when he walked in the room. Since Chris had been adamant about not allying with any other group. Most of all, you know, the GCPD. From here, we hop back to Batman. He's chatting up Leslie Tompkins after she patches Mikey up. She says he's critical, but not without hope. She then unmasks Bruce and embraces him. Bruce asks her why she decided to stay in Gotham post-Quake. She responds by sharing a story about his father. About how back in the days before Batman, Gotham was a very different place. Not quite as bad as No Man's Land, but not all that much better either. During this time, she asks Thomas Wayne why he stays in Gotham. To which he would reply, there's still work to be done. And those words stuck with her, and they still do. And that's why she stays. That's why she's always stayed. There's still work to be done, and she was honored to work alongside the man who told her that. She then turns it around and asks Bruce why he stays. And he doesn't give a complete answer, but says part of his decision as to why he stayed is due to Leslie herself. We next shift scenes over to the meeting between Commissioner Gordon and Father Chris. Gordon's there to give him an ultimatum, one final offer to finally ally with the GCPD. Chris accuses Gordon of threatening him, which in turn leads to Gordon actually threatening him. You see, the GCPD got them an anonymous tip about Father Chris's secret weapon stash from someone inside the Ark. Jim uses this as evidence that Chris has zero control over his parish. He doesn't even have the full faith of his flock. Gordon gives Chris that final shot. Hand over the arsenal, and the GCPD will guarantee their protection. Chris doesn't even answer. He just hops on his bicycle and rides away. Next stop, Batman is visiting with the Penguin. He tells him that Mikey almost died simply because of all the weapons the Penguin's putting out on the streets, which strikes me as a bit of a oversimplification, right? I don't think Ozzy necessarily wanted his arms on the streets. I think he was just storing them for later use. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't know. Batman demands to know where these weapons are being stashed, which by no means am I anything like the world's greatest detective, but shouldn't that be sort of kind of obvious? You know, Mikey was staying at the Ark. Mikey had the weapons. 2 + 2 = what? It seems pretty simple, doesn't it? Anyway, Cobblepot kind of laughs it off. He dares Batman to arrest him because, well, there ain't no laws here. He says, hell, the two guarantees in life are only half true anymore. You know, death and taxes. Death's still there. Taxes ain't. Batman then sprays a couple of Ozzy's heavies with some KO gas before placing a little widget on the table. Now, this widget is an electromagnetic pulse emitter, which Batman threatens will short-circuit and destroy all of the Penguin's generators. Well, this is enough for Oswald to eventually come clean about the location of the secret stash. And with that, Batman vanishes. And the Penguin demands that his heavies, Rocky and Carl, beat him back to the Ark and get those damned weapons back. From here, we rejoin the Scarecrow, who is writing a letter to Huntress while narrating in a very Devin Grayson sort of way. Well, maybe that's unfair. It's more a turn-of-the-century young comics writer sort of way, where it all but opens with Webster's Dictionary defines such and such as... It's that kind of thing. He's defining the word devil and rooting it down to its origins. It's kind of hammy, but not poorly written or anything. Anyway, Crane finishes his letter and hands it off to a young parishioner to deliver. Next, we head over to the Gotham Museum, where we meet up with Mikey's old running buddies, the former False Facers. Now they talk about Mikey being a traitor. They talk about Batman and his two broads. They also talk about all the weapons and ammo that are still being housed at the Ark. know, they want those weapons, but they're worried about all the parishioners, and they worry that they might have to fight their way through. Just then, the Scarecrow enters the scene to assure the baddies that they have absolutely nothing to worry about when it comes to the lambs of the church. Now, this takes us back to the church, where Father Chris is lighting some candles. Huntress appears in a very Batmanish way out of nowhere, which scares the father. He shares the fact that there's a leak inside the Ark. And Helena, she's not so sure what he's on about here. She doesn't know about the stash. She doesn't really know much of anything. Chris then wonders aloud where the Scarecrow is. And she reminds him that, well, Crane can come and go as he pleases, which that's all due to Father Chris himself. Just then, that young parishioner enters the scene to deliver Crane's letter to the Huntress. Now she opens it, scans it, and immediately rushes toward the fallout shelter. She appears a moment later, dumping out a crate of weapons while demanding answers from the fathers. We next shift over to the GCPD for a check-in with Jim and Sarah. Gordon's extremely worried about the potential powder keg about to blow up at the Ark. He also knows how badly the Blue Boys could use all them weapons, and how, at least if they have them, they can ensure they'll be used righteously. Nearby, we see Batman and Rocky and Carl rushing back toward the Ark here. It's a race. Inside the Ark, Scarecrow has returned to be a real dick. He's pretty open and honest about being the leak. He's like, what are you going to do about it? Chris blames him for ruining the sanctuary. Helena is there to remind him that this is largely his fault. Chris says he had no other choice. He made the only decision he could given the situation. Papaleo says he doesn't question Chris's decision, but he does question what he's going to do next. At that moment, the former False Facers arrive on the scene. The Huntress starts spouting out threats, telling them that if they dare enter, they won't be leaving alive. Father Chris pleads with her not to provoke them, to which Helena kind of big-leagues the father, telling him that he no longer calls any of the shots at the Ark. Meanwhile, Scarecrow is doing what he does best. He foments fear. He's trying to whip the flock up into a frenzy, wherein they grab arms and start killing fools. Father Chris decides to take point and full responsibility for the entire situation. And so he heads outside to confront the False Facers. And we close out with pretty much everybody within sight brandishing a firearm, and the Scarecrow smiling, satisfied in his role in all of this. That's where we leave it. Next time out, we wrap up the arc in Detective Comics number 731. So, what did we think about this issue here? Part 3 is... Yeah, one thing about this this arc here is it's really building upon itself, isn't it? You know, the Scarecrow, he's been planting seeds, and now they're starting to... They're starting to bear fruit here. And he's not even done yet. It's going to get even more... I don't want to say convoluted, but it's going to get more involved, and there's going to be a lot of entities getting involved in the final throwdown that we're going to be checking out next time. But here we're seeing, you know, the dominoes we saw set up last time getting tipped. We see that there's a leak in the Ark. The Scarecrow is tipping off the GCPD. Kind of, really, you know, Father Chris is like... He's basically tied up at every limb here, just waiting for the horses to rip him apart. Everybody has their sights set on poor Father Chris, who's just trying to keep people safe and fed and, I guess, as happy as they could be in this no man's land. But the poor guy, he can't seem to win for losing. And we wrap up here with him confronting a whole bunch of armed people who are there to take his weapons away, or the weapons that he's storing away. It's not a good day to be Father Chris, is it? But I tell you, I'm really enjoying this story. It's, you know, when we started this, and I realized that we were going to be getting, like, these... Like, everything was going to be arcs, right? I was a little nervous about that. And, I mean, we are still very, very young in this, so who knows where we might wind up. But I was nervous that it was going to feel disjointed, you know, and so far, I mean, we're only two stories in, but it feels organic. It feels like it's got a good flow to it. And I know during the synopsis, I did point out a few writer quirks, you know, and by no means am I seeing those as being negatives. It's just something that we saw an awful lot of around the turn of the century, at least I did, in the books I was reading. A lot of the, here's the word that I want to be the theme of the issue, so Webster's Dictionary defines it as, yada, 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 and then they go from there. I kind of got tired of that. I mean, it works. It works. It definitely is a tool a writer can use in order to maybe vamp a little bit, give their artist some time and room to draw whatever they're going to draw. But for me, it's totally not fair, but I instinctively kind of roll my eyes at that kind of stuff when I see it. It's a little too clever by half for me nowadays, and it feels like, you know, something that you'd, like a best man speech or the maid of honor speech, you know, Webster's Dictionary defines love as yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. I don't know why that gets stuck. I don't know why I get stuck on that as much as I do, but, what are you going to do, right? Or as a buddy of mine might say, Adonis. But I think that's about all we got to say about this issue. We're going to talk a lot more next time since we're going to be wrapping it up. And I don't want to get ahead of myself, so we will leave it there. Another really good issue. This arc so far has been really good. I definitely recommend it. And like I said, it is in the abridged trades. I'm sure you get it on the DC Marvel Unlimited, whatever it's called, Infinite. I'm sure it's there. Actually, I know for a fact it is there. But with all that said, how about we hop into the mailbag here? We're going to only cover one letter. And it comes from our friend Chris Yu, who's talking about the previous chapter of Fear of Faith. He says, Scarecrow proves that he's just as dangerous without his fear toxin as he is with it. He was able to manipulate Father Chris, Mikey, and the Huntress without any of them realizing it. I find it strange how Scarecrow is embraced by the art community while still dressed in his supervillain attire. I understand that the average reader wouldn't recognize Jonathan Crane out of his costume, so having him in costume makes sense for reader clarity. But in story, it doesn't make sense to me. And I mentioned the dark side sitting in Scott Free's living room. You know how weird that was, how surreal that was. And that we see Scarecrow here just chilling in a chair, you know, reading out of the Bible. It's very weird. I don't know if there could have been a happy medium there where maybe he's in his costume but without the mask. Right, we just have the straw sticking out of his shirt. We can tell it's a scarecrow, but it's just, you know, weirdo Jonathan Crane with his bowl haircut or whatever, sitting in the chair reading the Bible. But I do definitely also agree that, you know, Scarecrow proves that he is just as dangerous here, and perhaps even more so, because here he's got to be creative. He can't count on a chemical, you know? Here he's actually doing the scarecrow thing. This is the stuff that he should have been doing without the fear toxin. He should just be trying to inspire fear, foment fear, whip people into a frenzy, make them scared of their own shadow so they lash out. This is the kind of thing I love to see the scarecrow doing. And to see him do it, you know, raw without the gas is really, really cool. And definitely really well done by our creative team here. Chris continues. My final thoughts on the graphic novel topic are that no matter what you call it, graphic novel, trade paperback, graphic album, collected edition, reprint collection, or last Wednesday's leftovers, as long as you enjoy the stories, that's all that matters. A rose by any other name, yada, 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 and that's probably where we all ought to be, right? It's still really, really fun to have these conversations, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's what's between the covers, right? It's all about the story and whether or not we enjoy it. And like I said last time, when it comes to comic terminology, I'm every which way but floppy. That's the only line in the sand for me at this point. Chris continues. Strangely, though, I recently read a column by Brian Cronin over at CBR that explains the origin of the name trade paperback and how it didn't used to mean what comics fans use it to mean now. And it goes back to those Sons of Marvel collections you mentioned. How about that? That's interesting. Brian Cronin, I'm surprised he's still... I haven't read CBR in ages. CBR, I don't go to the comics news sites. They usually just annoy me. annoy me at best. Really, really annoy me at worst. And surprised to see Cronin still there, because he was probably the only reason to visit CBR back when I still did. He did the Urban Legends. He might still do it, for all I know. I honestly, his name hasn't crossed my mind in a very long time. And that's a real shame, because I really enjoyed his writing back in the day. I might have to... Well, I don't want to go to CBR, but maybe I will anyway and just see what Cronin's been up to. But thank you so much for writing in, Chris. I always enjoy hearing from you. And, of course, I'd love to hear from anybody who's listening. If you want to write in, join the conversation, just say hey. I encourage and invite you to do so. You can find me all those different ways. Chris is on infiniteearths.com, chrisandreggie.podbean.com, weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, and all the social media spots. But with all that said, I think that's where we'll end things for today. I'd like to thank you all so much for allowing me the privilege of keeping you company a little while today. And until next time, as always... I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Starting over won't be easy. Broken, divided, split tomorrow from today. Knowing what you know just makes it harder to think straight. Starting.